of Acts. We've been going through on Sunday nights and Wednesday nights. And we're taking a chapter at a time when we can. There's been a few times we've stopped and because the chapter was so long and there was multiple topics in the chapter. We just did half a chapter or so. But tonight we'll go ahead and read. We'll go through the whole chapter. And this is kind of it's a little bit of continuation from last week, or last, from Wednesday night. If you remember, Barnabas and Saul had gone to Jerusalem. The church at Antioch had sent them there with help for the church there. There was a drought in the land. Remember, Agabus had told them about this great dearth that was in the land. And so the church, in verse 29 it says, then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. And we talked about how, in this study, and we've talked about it in other studies we've had on the church a few months ago when we talked about mission works and stuff. This church in Antioch was very close to the church in Jerusalem. The church in Jerusalem had sent men there to organize that church. Barnabas and Saul had gone there and stayed with them for some time and taught them. And so there was a special love between the two churches. And so when the church in Jerusalem needed help, they sent help. And it doesn't really tell us what it was. Was it money or food? Or you would think in them, the way they had to travel back then, it was probably money. I kind of doubt that they would have sent groceries, but they may have. You know, they had ways of taking a caravan, I guess. But anyway, Barnabas, we ended off with Barnabas and Saul going to Jerusalem. In verse 30 says, which also they did and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Now, we'll pick up and we'll get back to Barnabas and Saul towards the end of chapter 12. So it stops off with them here. Chapter 12 picks up again with Peter. Remember, we were with Peter most of the last chapter, the last few chapters. Peter was the first to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. And now we see in verse 1, now about that time Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church. Now this time it's the king. Remember in the past it had been the high priest in the Sanhedrin court. Remember they had sent Saul, who later becomes Paul, and he's still called Saul here, but later the Lord changes his name. But this time it's King Herod. And remember, King Herod he's a de facto king. He's not really, not technically king, but the Romans have put him in power. He's supposedly a Jew, but he is sided with the Romans, and they like him because he's a puppet, and he'll do whatever they tell him, whatever they tell him to do. So and remember this name, Herod. There was a Herod who was in power, at the time that Jesus was born. Now that was this man's father, Herod the Great. There are, if you, and I don't, I wish I'd have printed it off, but there is somebody had a kind of a flow chart thing that showed the lineage of the Herods. And there's several men in that day and time and for a few generations there that went by the name Herod. It was a family name. From what I'm understanding, this Herod was technically called Herod the First. He would have been the same one who had John the Baptist put to death. He was the one that was in power when Jesus was crucified. So he wasn't in power that long, though. 4 or 5 years, something like that. I think from 41 AD to 44, 45, 46, something like that. So he wasn't there that long. And we'll see in this chapter where the Lord takes his life. So he didn't live a full life, is what we would consider a full life. But he was a very wicked man too. We see here where in the next verse he says, well, first he stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church. So he goes after the Lord's church too. Yeah. The Sanhedrin court, their man, Paul, he's no more. As far as they're concerned, he's a traitor now, and he has gone the way of the church. But Herod takes things in his own hands now. Now, later in our study in Acts, there's another Herod, Herod Agrippa, King Agrippa, is the son of this man. And we'll see him, and there's a woman named Bernice. She is Herod the first, the one we're talking about tonight. She is his daughter, King Agrippa, and Bernice, her brother and sister. We'll talk about that at another time. So don't get the Herods confused. They're all in the New Testament, and they're go by the same name, but there's different time periods. And so this one we know, he dies in this chapter, so he's not the one that Paul meets with later. Now, verse 2, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because he saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. This James, the brother of John, has kind of been the leader of the church in Jerusalem up until this point. He's, for whatever reason, the scripture's not clear, but he seems to have taken the lead at the church. The apostles really didn't have a head among them. They all kind of cooperated together. There were others who were more outspoken, like Peter. We see Peter. We see John going out with Peter at times. We see James was, like I said, he seems to have been the leader of the group in Jerusalem at the church. He's kind of led things at the church. I think it just, in the Lord's plan of things, it kind of worked. That's how it worked. You know, they needed leadership, and whether he was the most level-headed or what, we don't know. But he became that one. And now Herod kills him, and he's the brother of John. Remember, the sons of Zebedee. That's who these are. And that's who we remember those from the stories of Jesus' day. He kills him with the sword. And Herod sees that it pleased the Jews. Because remember, the Jews are very much against the church in that day. It was the Jews who had sent Saul out to persecute the church. And the Jews at this point are bloodthirsty. They don't mind killing people, you know, for whatever reason. And they're an evil bunch. Anything that they consider blasphemous against the temple and against Moses, they're going to kill them. And so they do. And that's what Saul was doing. Remember, he held the coats of those who stoned Stephen. And afterwards, we saw where he went out. He got a warrant from the chief priest himself to go and persecute the Lord's people. And, of course, the Lord stopped him. And we've studied that story, so we won't go back over that. But here he kills James, and now he goes after Peter. And remember, Peter's probably the most outspoken one. He's the one we hear from the most so far in the book of Acts. He's the one who preached the great sermon on the day of Pentecost. He's the one that when he preached that sermon, there was over 3,000 souls that were saved. There's a second sermon he preached not many days after that, where there were several thousand souls saved. He's proven to be a great leader in that movement. And the Jews are mad at him about it. They want him dead. So they figure, well, James is the leader of the church. We'll get him first. Peter's next. He's the one that's causing all the problems. And Herod the king has stepped in, and because he saw that it pleased the Jews. He saw that it pleased the Jews. He didn't do this for personal reasons, not because he hated James or Peter, but because he saw it was going to win him popularity with the Jews. And that's what he sought. Because remember, the Jews don't like Herod because he's not of the lineage of David. He's not their true king, and they know it. But to win their affection and to win their respect, he does what they have been trying to do and couldn't do. Remember, they were trying to kill the Lord's people, the Lord's church, and it didn't happen. Now Herod takes things in his own hands and does it. He kills James, and now he's after Peter. And notice it says, then were the days of unleavened bread, the Passover. We've studied that a few months ago. It's time for the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, which lasts about 7 days. And we won't go back. We studied that before. We won't go back to the Old Testament and look at that. But remember that's what he's referring to here. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quadrants of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. So this is a serious matter. They're scared of this guy. If they got to put that many soldiers with him, four quadrants of soldiers is a lot of men. And plus he's in prison. So they have seen what happens with God's people. Remember Peter and John. How many times so far have we seen that the Lord freed them from prison? At least twice that we've seen so far. There's been other times that others were imprisoned and the Lord freed them. Just, you know, they show back up the next day to check on them and they're not there. They've escaped. And so now they're going to make sure Peter is not going to get away. And then we've talked about in the past this word Easter and how the two thoughts on that. And we won't go deep into that tonight. I'll just mention it that, you know, there's those that will think that this was the pagan celebration that Herod would have participated in, but that's not what we read here. This is the Passover. This is time for the Passover for the Jews. Now, yes, they would have been close to the same time of the year, but that's not what he's referring to here. Why the translators chose this word, other than the fact that they had been Catholic at one time. I don't know. I don't have an answer for why they chose this word, other than they just they went with what they knew. And it's obvious that this is the Passover time. Peter therefore was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. Yeah. Now remember, if he stays in prison the whole time, he's going to be there for at least 7 days before the holiday's over with and before he'll be able to see the king again. So they're planning on keeping him for 7 days. This is not an overnight stay. This is not just a weekend stay. This is a week-long, seven-day stay. And while he's there, he says, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. And that's how we should be. When we have a brother or a sister that's in trouble, especially as serious as what Peter's in, we need to be praying for him. Right. And when Herod would have brought him forth, the same night, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers bound with chains and the keepers before the door kept the prison. So after the 7 days are up, the holiday's over with, and Herod's ready to bring him forth, but the night before, we see what's about to happen. He's fixing to get out. And it doesn't matter how many guards they have on him, he still gets out. And behold, the angel of the Lord. There's the key. The angel of the Lord. Peter didn't do this on his own. the rest of the apostles didn't help him other than with their prayers. The church didn't come out and protest and demand his freedom. We don't see that anywhere either, do we? That seems to be a thing in our day, is to go out and protest something we don't like. These people didn't protest. They went and prayed. That's what the Lord commanded them to do. When you have a bad situation, you would go and pray. And behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shined in the prison, and he smote Peter in the side. Don't just come up, kicked him in the side, told him get up, you know, and raised him up, saying, arise up quickly. And his chains fell off from his hands, and the angel said unto him, gird thyself and bind on thy sandals. And so he did. And he saith unto him, cast thy garment upon thee and follow me. And he went out and followed him, and wist not that it was true which was done by the angel, but thought he saw a vision. You notice Peter doesn't say anything this whole time. Doesn't question anything. He just gets up and does it. He knows who this is. He knows it's the angel of the Lord. He knows. And the chains fall off of his hands. No man comes and takes them off of him. They just fall off. Another miracle. And the angel tells him to get up, get dressed, put your shoes on, and put your coat on, and let's go. Follow me. And Peter doesn't dally around. He goes. He follows him. Yeah. And he's dazed the whole time. You know, he just woke up from a deep sleep. Yeah. Yeah, you know, this wasn't a nap. This is sleep for the night. He's in a deep sleep, and this angel is woking him up. He's still a little dazed, doesn't realize what's going on. He thinks it's a vision. He thinks he's dreaming. But he realizes that it's not, that this is real. When they were past the first and the second ward, they came into the iron gate that leadeth unto the city. So he's pretty deep in the prison. He's not just in the outer cell. He's deep in the prison. These people were meant to keep him this time. They had the experience before of putting Peter in prison. They knew what it was like for him to escape. He did things that Houdini never thought about. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course he had the Lord that Houdini didn't have. So, when they were past the first and second ward, they came unto the iron gate that leadeth unto the city, which opened to them of his own accord. The gate opened by itself. Nobody opened it. And they went out and passed on through one street and forthwith the angel departed from him. So once he's out in the open and he's safe, the angel leaves him. And when Peter was come to himself, in other words, when he finally wakes up, he finally gets his bearings about himself and he's wide awake now and sees where he's at. He said, now I know of the surety that the Lord hath sent his angel and hath delivered me out of the hand of Herod and from all the expectation of the people of the Jews. Now we hear Peter speak. Yeah. And what words he speaks. He knows what's happened. There's no doubt. He knows now. There's no doubt that the Lord's in this. And right. If it's not his time to go, it's not his time to go. He knows now the Lord's not done with him. And when he had considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark. And we'll see more about this John Mark at another time in another study in this book. But that's who this is. This is Mark the Apostle. And we see another woman named Mary. There's multiples of those too. So this is not the Mary, mother of Jesus. This is not the mother, the Mary of Martha and Mary. This is a different woman. This is the mother of John, or the mother of Mark, John Mark. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came to hearken named Rhoda, And when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness, but ran in and told how Peter stood before the gate. She didn't even let him in. You know, he just got out of prison, just escaped from prison. So you would think that the posse's probably after him, you know, and she didn't even open, she recognizes his voice, she knows who it is, but she didn't even let him in. So he's still outside the locked gate while she goes and tells everybody else. And when she, and they said unto her, thou art mad. They told her, you're crazy, there's no way. They knew where he was, they knew how serious this matter was, they knew there was no escaping where he was at, is what they thought. But she constantly affirmed that it was even so. Then said they, it is his angel. In other words, it's his spirit. It's his ghost. You know, it's not really him. It's something else representing him. And they didn't believe her. But Peter continued knocking. And when they had opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. He didn't run away. He wanted in. You know, he wanted them. My suspicion here is he wanted them to know what happened. He wanted a witness for the Lord here. He wanted the Lord's church to know what the Lord had done for him. But he beckoning unto them with the hand to hold their peace, declared unto them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he said, go show these things unto James and to the brethren, and be departed. And he departed and went into another place. Now this James here is not the same James that was killed in the first part of the chapter.
Well,
you know, that's obvious. from what I understand, this would have been James. Remember, there was a James that was the brother of Jesus. He was also part of that group. That's very possibly who this is. Which I think was probably the same James that wrote the book of James. So, and he departed and went into another place. So, he told him, you know, go spread the word to this other brother. Let him know so that everybody knows. And everybody's worried about him. Everybody's still praying for him, remember? They think he's going to be put to death the next day. And here it is the middle of the night, and he's out roaming the street, looking for somebody to take him in. Now, as soon as it was day, there was no small stir among the soldiers what was become of Peter. Can you imagine the soldiers, the thoughts they had when they wake up the next morning and he's gone? The chains are laying there on the floor, and he's gone. His clothes are gone, his shoes are gone, and he's gone. And they slept through it all. More proof that this had to be another Lord, because surely if he'd have done this on his own, he would have woke somebody up trying to get out, you know, they'd have been woken up by somebody trying to get in to get him. And when Herod had sought for him and found him not, he examined the keepers and commanded that they should be put to death. And he went down from Judea to Caesarea and there abode. Remember, the kings in that day had a, I don't know if you want to call it a summer palace or what, in Caesarea. They had a vacation home in Caesarea. So when they wanted to get out of Jerusalem, that's where they went. And that's what Herod does. But he questions the soldiers. They don't know what happened. They're innocent, and he still hasn't put to death. Paused for some reason.
I thought that
was
something.
No, our broadcast paused for some reason. So, and when Herod had these keepers of the prison put to death, and then he goes on a vacation. You know, that shows you the cruelty of this man, and the evilness, and no respect of persons. We've heard that before, right? That's how he was. Now we read in the rest of the chapter, we'll see what happens to this man. And Herod was highly displeased with them of Tyre and Sidon. But they came with one accord to him, and having made Blastus the king's chamberlain their friend, desired peace, because their country was nourished by the king's country. And upon a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon his throne, and had an oration unto, and made an oration unto them. So here's these people in Tyre and Sidon, in the area of Caesarea, for whatever reason, he was displeased with them. He didn't like them. They weren't to his liking for some reason, and they had made friends with his one of his closest servants, his chamberlain, the man that took care of him, and were trying to seek peace with the king because he gave government handouts to the people, to that country.
That's right.
So that was the only reason they were trying to be friends with him, looks like, because otherwise he might have killed him like he did everybody else. So, but anyway, it says, upon a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon his throne and made an oration unto them. He gives a great speech to these people. We don't know what he said exactly. Doesn't tell us. But he's all in his pomp and circumstance here, and he's high and mighty and looking out over the crowd and gives a great speech. Doesn't even stand. He sits. Says he sat upon his throne. Sat upon his throne and gave a speech. You know, the common practice even in their day was for a man to stand and give a speech. That was customary. That was respectful to the crowd. He has no respect for anybody. And the people gave a shout, saying, "It is the voice of a God and not of a man." Notice it says a God, not God. They weren't accusing him of being the God. They were giving him the title of a God. And in that day, remember, they've just, not many generations before this, were steeped in Greek mythology, now Roman mythology. They've been through all that. And so there's still a bit of, in certain areas of the Roman Empire, there's still bits and pieces of paganism that people still believe in those things, those superstitions and those false gods. And they count him as being a part of that. Yeah. Notice he says, and not of a man. In other words, they think he's higher than anybody, any man. He's a God. And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him, because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. Mm-hmm. The angel of the Lord smote him.
Right.
Why? Because he took glory for something that God should have gotten.
Right.
And yeah, you know, I don't think we see much of that today. I think it is out there. I think the Lord does at times. We'll strike a man down when it is his choosing. But in this case, the king. The king, he considered himself the king of the Jews, actually. If you go back and read the story of the Herods, they considered themselves kings of the Jews. The Jews didn't, but they did. They were, as far as they were concerned, they ranked right up there with the Messiah himself. But in this case, this man, because of his denial of God, and because he took glory that wasn't his, you know, he didn't tell them different. You know, they were the ones that put it on him. But we don't know what his speech was either. You know, he obviously said things that they liked and things that caused them to raise him above God himself. And God struck him dead in front of him, the way it looks, because it says immediately, that while he's receiving this praise from the people, immediately the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory. But the word of God grew and multiplied. It changes. The thought here changes from Herod quickly to God. The word of God grew and multiplied. Despite all that Herod tried to do, it grew and multiplied. And Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their ministry and took with them John, whose surname was Mark. So here we're back to Barnabas and Saul, like I said we would be. They're done at Jerusalem. They go back to Antioch. And this time they take John Mark with them. And we'll see later. He'll go on some missionary journeys with them. And begins to work with them in the ministry. He is one of the apostles, but up until this point, we haven't heard much from him. Other than the book that he wrote, we haven't heard much from him. So we're about to start getting into the great missionary journeys into the Gentile nations. Peter, so far, is the only one that's preached to the Gentiles, but Paul and Barnabas and John Mark and some others. And we know Luke travels with them. He's the one that writes all this. So we'll pick up with chapter 13 next time. We'll stop there for tonight. And